This podcast is shared for the purposes of information only. The discussion does not reflect a direct or implied endorsement by Municipal World or its members.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. From Municipal World, I'm Susan Gardner. This is the MW Shares podcast, where we share your stories, providing insights into the challenges and opportunities facing local governments and communities just like yours.
I'd like to thank Evergreen for sponsoring this podcast. What does creating a bold future for communities look like? This fall, join Future Cities Canada for the summit. Tap into thought-provoking virtual sessions that showcase innovations for our communities to recover and thrive. Register for free at futurecities.canada/the summit. Hi, everybody. Joining me today is Gabby Kalapos, the Executive Director of the Clean Air Partnership. Hi, Gabby.
Hi there, Scott. Thanks for having me today.
Well, thanks for joining us. It's great you could be here. CAP's been around the municipal sector for a long time, doing a lot of good work, and it's going to be a good conversation today.
Perfect. I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. Well, why don't you tell us why, in your opinion, you think the municipal sector is important for advancing climate actions?
I would love to kind of say, like, I believe all sectors of society are really, really important for advancing climate action. But in particular, one of the key things that I think makes the municipal sector so important is that, one, they are in charge of building our communities. And as such, how we build our communities has a huge implications on how much energy we need to use. So from the perspective of like land uses, where we actually are allowing for development, where we are encouraging land development, where it fits in with public transit, how those requirements on the buildings in terms of the sustainability metrics they do. But I think one of the main areas why municipalities are so important on climate change is the fact that they do build our communities, and how we build our communities will have huge implications on greenhouse gas emissions, energy use, and the sustainability of our communities.
Yeah, interesting. You mentioned metrics there. Have you seen much progress being made on how municipalities first plan for and then track some of those sustainability metrics?
We've certainly made improvements. We still have a ways to go in terms of bringing climate change considerations into our decision making on how we build our communities. Municipalities are advancing green development standards. The growth plan has helped to raise the awareness of the environmental and economic implications of how we build our communities. An interesting thing, I think, you know, certainly from the perspective of when the growth plan came in, which I think is going on to 20 years now, actually. But when that first came in, was really touted as an environmental policy. One of the things we often forget about with regards to the growth plan is just how much of an economic policy the growth plan is. I think that's something that we tend to forget, but it's really, really important because where we develop will have implications for the cost associated with how much infrastructure we need to build, how efficient we are with the use of existing infrastructure. In addition, it would also have to determine how big a role public transit is able to play in helping to increase mode shifts and how much of a role active transportation can play in moving mode shifts away from single occupancy vehicle. But one of the things I think is really important that we tend to forget about the growth plan is while it is absolutely an environmental policy, we know how we build our communities will have a huge impact on how much it costs us to service our developments. In addition, it will also have a huge implications on how much property tax revenue is coming in for different types of land uses in order to pay for the rehabilitation of that infrastructure when we inevitably reach the stage where we have to rehabilitate our infrastructure. And I think that's one of the things that we often forget is like, we didn't end up with an infrastructure deficit by accident. Yes, it's absolutely the case that municipalities receive far less of the tax payments than in comparison to the province and the federal government. But we also need to recognize that the property tax base needs to kind of understand how much infrastructure costs and whether these different types of land uses are holding their own in terms of that rehabilitation and servicing cost, while also ensuring that, you know, there is a recognition of different types of land use, how much they cost, how much it costs to rehabilitate them, and whether the property tax base can pay for that rehabilitation.
Interesting. We do have listeners from coast to coast to coast. So maybe you could, for their benefit, talk about what that growth plan is in a nutshell.
So the growth plan is really looking at it from the perspective of identifying how much of our development is going to be targeted towards areas where infrastructure already exists. So the intensification of making sure that we're using our existing infrastructure to the maximum extent possible. And then how much is going to be enabled via greenfield development, so where the new infrastructure needs to take place, how much of it is taking place in low density, how much is playing mid density, high density, so that there's a lot more diversity in the different types of land uses across our communities. For the longest time, we've had a strong emphasis on greenfield development, and less so on intensification. But over the last number of decades, we've been really identifying that intensification is really, really critical to ensuring the long-term financial sustainability of our communities. I think one of the areas that's also interesting is that we do have a tendency to think of intensification only as high rise, like, you know, that's like low rise greenfield development versus intensification high rise. And there's a lot of variation between those two that we really need to advance within our communities to provide more diversity and more options, especially considering how challenging the housing market is at present.
Yeah, for sure. So maybe you could step back for a second, Gabby, before we get into kind of those concepts. And I want to pick your brain a little bit about the missing middle. But first, could you tell our listeners what CAP is and a little bit about some of the work that CAP does to support its municipal members?
For sure. So the Clean Air Partnership is a charitable environmental organization. One of the main modus operandi of the Clean Air Partnership is to help municipalities and their various partners implement clean air and climate change actions. And not only just within their own jurisdiction, but as each individual municipality undertakes a clean air or climate change action, we play a role in ensuring that what they're doing is being shared with other municipalities. And then we ask the question, okay, if one of you can do this, what would stop all of your municipalities from doing so? And then we bring the collective brain power together across the municipal staff to identify issues, barriers, research that we need to undertake in order to streamline and scale up the implementation of those actions. So that's one of the modus operandi of the Clean Air Partnership, is really to keep an eye out for the implementation of actions at the municipal level and getting those municipalities to share their experiences, learnings with all the other municipalities on an ongoing basis so that we can ensure that each municipality is building on the work of others and continuous improvement is part of our values and efforts moving forward.
For sure. And I know speaking to some of your members that they really appreciate the network that you've created. And one of the great things I think about working in the municipal sector is how ready people are to kind of share best practices with each other and kind of disseminate that information. Has that been your experience as well?
Absolutely. I cannot speak highly enough about that desire to learn and to share your learnings with others. It's such a collaborative environment. I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, there's municipal competition that takes place, but that kind of proprietariness that might be in the private sector with regards to competition, there's enormous, far more cooperation that I find takes place in the municipal world than, you know, competition. I'm not saying competition doesn't exist. It does. And there's some good things to that. Absolutely. But the value that a lot of municipal staff bring to it is one of cooperation and sharing.
Yeah, for sure. So let's get back to a concept you introduced earlier, which was how important intensification is. And I think you said that intensification is critical for the long-term financial stability of communities. Can you drill down into that for a second and give us a little bit more detail?
Yeah, I think it kind of speaks to the infrastructure deficit that all municipalities are know about. And, you know, certainly that AMO and FCM have been advancing on the conversation about our infrastructure deficit and what impact it might have on our communities. I think that's one of the things that where it leads to this conversation is that we have made a lot of improvements in terms of identifying the cost associated with growth. And then identifying the role that those new developments needs to play in terms of development fees to pay for that initial infrastructure that gets created to serve those communities. And I think that municipalities in the last, you know, two decades have made enormous gains in understanding the growth costs, undertaking development charge cost studies to understand what their infrastructure costs are. But what we haven't done as good a job on is identifying how much it costs to service and rehabilitate our land uses and our different parts of our community based off the property tax system, which ultimately is the one that has to fund the servicing of our communities and the rehabilitation of our infrastructure when that time inevitably comes. And one of the key things that I think is really important is that municipalities haven't done enough research on those ongoing servicing costs, and certainly did far less on those rehabilitation costs and applying them to different land uses to know which land uses are holding their own in terms of paying for their infrastructure and servicing, and which ones are requiring more money in terms of the municipality than the property tax base is providing. So I think that's something that's definitely needs to be increased on the radar in municipalities is really doing that analysis, not just for our development costs at the time when the communities are first being built, but the different ways land uses have an implication on our servicing costs and our rehabilitation costs over time.
Yeah, they have an evolution of purpose and metrics, I think, there. I mean, I certainly saw that when I was involved in energy management at the municipal level. You know, 20 years ago, the discussion was about the capital cost of a buildings. And now you see it's progressed from operating costs to a full kind of life cycle cost analysis pretty much across the board. So it sounds like you're kind of suggesting the same kind of evolution needs to happen in terms of the overall land use planning.
Absolutely.
Interesting. So let's get back to climate action, because I know this is dear to your heart and dear to some of the actions that CAP advances. So what are some of the top climate action municipalities are advancing?
So I definitely would say one of the first things municipalities are advancing is getting their own house in order, which means looking at their own facilities and identifying the opportunities for energy reductions. And as you know, the province of Ontario has a requirement that municipalities and all public sector entities report on their energy use in their buildings on an annual basis and develop a 5-year energy conservation plan that sets out a target for reduction. One of the recent things that we did is a lot of the municipalities just updated their corporate energy plan for 2019. But very just shortly thereafter, a lot of the municipal councils were passing climate emergency declarations. So what we did is we dug a little bit into their 2019 corporate energy plans to identify how aligned they were with their climate emergency declarations. And what we found was that there was a lot of room for improvements with regards to alignment. And a lot of municipalities are moving to update their 2019 plans and turning those corporate energy plans into net zero corporate energy plans. And there's a whole series of policies that they're advancing, especially with regards to life cycle costing, incorporating corporate energy and GHG reduction targets into their asset management plans. So a lot of those kind of improvements are taking place, and that's where the municipality has absolute control because they control how much energy use is within their buildings. So that's one area where they're making enormous strides. I would say another area where they're making progress as well is within their own corporate fleets. But one of the things that's really important to realize is that, you know, municipalities' own energy use is often only accounts for like often about 3, maybe 5, 7% if they actually really provide a lot of services like public transit and waste management. But they only kind of like they're certainly under the 10% of emissions across the community. So that's the direct control they have, and they need to use that kind of control to follow through on their climate emergency declarations in order to ensure that they have the credibility they need moving forward and building partnerships. The second area that is really, really important from the municipalities and what they're moving forward with is they have a huge influence on the energy use. As we were speaking about the growth plan and how we build our communities will have a huge implications on our energy use and greenhouse gas emissions of our communities. So that's another area where municipalities are really looking for where, you know, they probably control about 60, you know, have an influence on 60% of their community's greenhouse gas emissions through access to public transit, transportation plan routes, looking at it from the perspective of where development occurs, where they're looking at the buildings that are existing and new buildings. So they have a lot of those influences. They're putting a lot of levers they have available to them in order to help reduce the greenhouse gas emissions associated with those other sectors that while they may not control those sectors, they have influence on those sectors. So I'll give you an example of some of the key top areas where municipalities have a lot of influence and where emissions are most likely to come from their community. The first one is either always a toss-up between transportation and buildings. We'll use an example because in a lot of jurisdictions, buildings account for almost 40 to 60% of greenhouse gas emissions within the community. And municipalities have a lot of influence and authorities over new developments that are occurring within their municipalities. So a lot of municipalities are advancing green development standards. And what green development standards are is they are a sustainability metric that a developer would be applying to identify where there's opportunities to increase the sustainability of new developments. One of the first most common ones that a lot of the metrics that are in green development standards are also either, you know, related to the energy use or the greenhouse gas emissions of the new building. In addition, they also look at a lot of other aspects like how much precipitation is dealt with on site, low impact development, how much active transportation infrastructure is being incorporated into the development, how about the urban tree canopy, soil depth to ensure a healthy urban canopy, access to green space, access to public transit, access to amenities. How well is that community interacting with other services within the municipality? Looking at bird-friendly design. So they include electric vehicle strategies. So they look at a whole bunch of different sustainability metrics within new municipalities. So I'd say green development standards are definitely something where a lot of municipalities are making a lot of inroads and advancing a lot of their climate actions using green development standards as a mechanism to address the sustainability metrics of new developments.
That's interesting. So that's a pretty lengthy list of things that could be included under those green standards. For those small municipalities who are just kind of getting started in this and maybe a little bit outside of a major growth center, what advice would you give to those types of communities on how to get started?
Yeah, so if you're from a community that's not a high growth community, green development standards don't make a lot of sense because it doesn't meet your local circumstances. But every single community has existing buildings in their portfolio of opportunities. And while municipalities don't have as much authorities over existing buildings as they do for new developments, they do have a really, really important role in helping their residents to advance the energy efficiency opportunities associated with their homes, properties, and businesses. So a lot of municipalities are really looking to advance home energy efficiency retrofit programs that would lend their residents money in order to undertake energy efficiency measures, helping them manage those energy efficiency projects, because we all know that undertaking a renovation is never an easy task. Helping their residents really navigate the complicated world that is an energy efficiency retrofit. And one of the main reasons why this makes sense, not only from an environmental perspective, but also from an economic perspective, is that most of the money that we spend on energy leaves our community. About 90% of it just leaves the community, never to be seen again. Whereas any investment we make in energy efficiency will likely have local economic development opportunities for our communities. And why that is the case is because energy efficiency is still a labor-intensive exercise. In addition, it also means that these are local jobs that cannot be outsourced because they have to be, you know, local residents are the ones who are likely to meet the needs of these energy efficiency retrofits. And in addition, all the money that gets saved from spending on energy that would have left the community now is retained within the community in the form of local economic development and job creation. And over the long term, once the loan is paid back, all of those savings have the opportunity to support more disposable income that can be spent locally rather than being spent on energy, which then leaves the community.
Yeah, that's a particularly interesting model. And I believe that there are a number of communities in the Maritimes, for example, that have really latched onto this concept and have launched their own PACE programs. Are you seeing that being taken up in Ontario as well?
Yeah, we're a little bit slow out of the gate. So far, I know the legislation allowing for these PACE programs changed in Ontario in 2012. And then Toronto came out with their program, I think it was in 2014, if my memory serves me correctly. But then we haven't had any other municipalities advancing these programs. And one of the things that is the reason why we haven't advanced these programs just as yet is because these programs are challenging to administer on the part of the municipality. We're all working together to try and find ways of efficiency of scale that can occur. We were certainly hoping that this was going to be something that was going to occur with Green On when we had one of those Green On in place. But then when we lost Green On, we licked our wounds for a little period of time. But then, you know, this was just too important to sit there licking your wounds. So, you know, certainly started advancing this model with the municipalities. And then thankfully, the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, FCM, got funding from the federal government in order to advance these types of home energy efficiency retrofit financing programs. So right now, while we only have one program in market at present, and that is the City of Toronto, within a year, we're going to have four more Ontario municipalities with programs in market. We are getting the greener homes from the federal government. You know, there's been promises with regards to the CMHC programs, and all of these need to be brought together to make it easier for the customer to navigate these programs. But we're also going to be getting more and more Ontario municipalities developing and delivering these types of programs within their community. I would say another key challenge for, especially for those smaller municipalities, is there's got to be a more efficient way to deliver these programs. And there's these third party models that are working to got to get tested out in the Ontario market to figure out what's going to work for those smaller jurisdictions who do not have the capabilities to run these programs on their own and not enough local partners who can run the program for them. So I think that's definitely something that I think is going to be a really high priority in the coming years, because we have to get these programs taking place in all different size communities in order to ensure that the benefits of these programs are getting shared all across Ontario.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, the kind of third party approach. When I was working in the United States on the energy efficiency front, we came across a number of PACE organizations, so Property Says Clean Energy, which is essentially what you're talking about, at the state level. And they acted as basically aggregators and trainers for those local municipalities that might not have the capacity to do so. You think that a similar thing might happen here in Canada?
I mean, it would be lovely if we can get a province-wide program. That's one of the reasons why we are so excited about the prospect of Green On taking on that role of doing a province-wide third-party delivery on behalf of municipalities. I haven't seen the province advancing that model just as yet. And in all likelihood, a province-wide program would need to be kind of delivered in partnership with the province. One of the things that I think is a kind of a silver lining about this more kind of community by community focus that we are that we're advancing in Ontario is that it does allow us to speak directly to the needs of the different communities, which is something that would have been more challenging to do in a province-wide program. So, you know, it's obviously probably not the most efficient, but it does mean that we are going to be advancing a program that's more specific to the needs of the different communities.
I think we've been talking about some of the many exciting projects that are happening at the local level and programs, as well as some of the opportunities. But what do you think some of the changes that are required to take place to ensure municipalities can act on their climate opportunities?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I certainly think that while there's a lot of opportunities for municipalities to move forward on a lot of climate actions, whether it be from the building sector, whether it be advancing their active transportation or their stormwater management plans and their, you know, new developments and electric vehicle strategies, there are limitations in terms of the authorities municipalities have that really requires different levels of government to all be working together in order to enable the opportunities at all the various levels to be advanced. And I'll give you an example. Certainly, you know, the province plays a big role in terms of setting overall policy, but a lot of those policies get implemented at the local level. For example, we know that municipalities don't have as much authorities over their existing building stock as they do over their new building stock. But let's just say, for example, we also know that, you know, we need to be starting advancing. We've seen the progress that's happened in jurisdictions that advanced energy labeling that have, you know, required energy disclosure at the time of sale or requiring landlords to disclose energy costs of their units so that, you know, renters can actually have a clear indication of exactly what their costs are going to be to carry that property on an ongoing basis. So you're not just basing your decision on whether you go to that unit or not go to that unit simply on the rent costs, but you're actually factoring your total cost into consideration, looking at your utilities as well. And that would be a really important thing to require in order to build the energy literacy amongst the renters and for consumer protection for renters so that they know exactly what their carrying costs are going to be. That's something that would really require provincial and municipal collaboration to move forward. So that's an example of one area where there really is the need for the province and municipalities to work together. Another area is also regards to energy labeling. So requiring energy disclosure or requiring an energy audit at the time of your property being listed so that, again, the future property owner can have a clear identification of exactly what their carrying costs are going to be. And that also means that energy efficiency can play a role in terms of property value improvements so that you can help build a stronger value proposition for property owners to undertake energy efficiency retrofit efforts.
Interesting. So we've seen a lot of movement in terms of what realtors will list in a listing these days. And, you know, one metric that comes to mind is a home or a neighborhood's walkability score. Are you suggesting that we might add some environmental metrics, so like the greenhouse gas footprint or the energy score of a facility?
Absolutely. All the other, I mean, you look at European countries and they're all doing that, and it helps to drive the energy and climate literacy of the general population as a whole and to bring more of a value proposition for energy efficiency retrofit undertakings.
Yeah, it seems like an opportunity perhaps for the real estate community to embrace.
Yeah, at present you can, and there is a space in the MLS listing. The problem is that it's a voluntary mechanism and we're not getting uptake from the real estate community in terms of voluntary identification of energy scores. So that's where I think that we really need to be working together between the province, between the municipalities, the realtors, to find a way to make that so that we're getting uptake and getting that listed in the MLS, because having in a field there that doesn't get filled in isn't really going to make a hell of a lot of difference in our efforts.
Yeah, good point. What would be the one action you would advance if you had a magic wand?
I think one of the actions I would advance if I had the magic wand is ensuring that all of us are working together and rowing in the same direction. We have an enormous challenge ahead of us with regards to taking on this climate change, challenge that we have ahead of us. And I also want to say that it's a climate change opportunity. If we actually had a better representation, visualization of what low carbon communities would look like, I think all of us would want to live there right now. We wouldn't be so scared of them because they're more livable communities. There's more green space, less air pollution. Our buildings are more efficient. They cost us less to run. There's a whole bunch of energy benefits that will extend beyond just the greenhouse gas emissions and increase livability. I think that's one of the areas that I think is really, really critical to starting to help us visualize what do these low carbon communities look like and what does it mean for how we function within them. So I would definitely kind of think, you know, certainly these kind of narratives and helping the visualization of what our future communities are going to look like, I think is really important. And I think that in order to make those new low carbon communities a reality, we have to have alignment across efforts at the federal government, within the provincial government, within municipal governments, within developers and home builders. Like this is an all hands on deck. We can have arguments about the best way to achieve our net zero targets and our community livability goals. That I wholeheartedly encourage good, healthy debate about the different ways to reach our destination, our goal. But what I think is really undermining is where we're not all working together. I'll use an example. You know, certainly municipalities are advancing net zero targets and net GHG reduction targets, but we also are, you know, the municipalities don't have control over the energy system as a whole. That is provincial jurisdiction. And while we're ramping up our natural gas use and our electricity generation, that's going to undermine our long-term GHG reduction targets. So we really need to have the province and the municipalities working together.
And finally, Gabby, what's the best book you've read lately?
Oh, actually, I just finished reading Bill Bryson's A Short History of Nearly Everything. And I cannot recommend it enough. Bill Bryson is also he's just really great science writer. He is just also really, really humorous. You don't often find a science history book that goes through, you know, from the Big Bang all the way to our present day, taking us through on the, you know, the scientists who dedicated their lives to understanding our world. But he's also really funny. And in addition, he also points out just how human scientists are and the infighting and pettiness that has occurred within the scientific world throughout history. And it's pretty funny because sometimes he makes it read like the scientists of Beverly Hills or something like that, with the, you know, the infighting that took place between different sciences as they debated each other.
Well, they're humans after all, I guess.
They are.
Well, Gabby, thank you so much for all of your actions to reduce the impacts of climate change at the local level. I think anyone can certainly hear you're passionate about the issue. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. It was lovely chatting with you, Scott. And thank you so much for all the great work you're doing with the Municipal World magazine. It's a great magazine.
We'd like to hear your ideas. If you have a topic you'd like to see covered in a future episode, simply drop us an email at stories@municipalworld.com. Also, don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe. I'm Susan Gardner for Municipal World, and we'll be back with more stories next week.